Give it up for Sunshine Lencho, everyone.
Yo, make some noise for Sunshine Lencho.
Thank you, Alex. Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. As you'll see in your program, this panel is supposed to give you insight into the current status of regulations and laws in California. And I'm happy to be joined by Luke Stanton, if everyone will raise their hand since we don't have name tags. Luke Stanton, he's managing partner of Frontera Law Group, which is based in Sherman Oaks and provides business and legal advice to investors, business owners, and potential new market entrants throughout California. To Luke's right, we have Hezekiah Allen. And Hezekiah Allen, for those of you who don't know, is the executive director of the California Growers Association, representing farmers in California. We are really, really, really grateful that our third panelist, Ms. Amber Morris, was able to join us. She's not in your program, as she wasn't clear on whether or not she would be here this morning. And we're really happy to have Ms. Morris with us because she is branch chief of Cal Cannabis Cultivation Licensing within the California Department of Food and Agriculture. So that means she's responsible for our farmers and ensuring that the regulations around cultivation in California roll out as smoothly as possible, given her mandate. And yeah, so thank you very much for being here, Ms. Morris. And last but not least, we are joined by Ms. Lori Ajax, who is our first ever Chief of California's Bureau of Medical Cannabis Regulation. Thank you very much for being here, Ms. Ajax. So the structure of our panel this morning will be to begin with a conversation with regulators. We're not going to assume that people in this room have spent the last 2 years following the MCRSA rollout and Prop 64. So there'll be a general overview from each of them about what each of their departments does and what they're responsible for. Then we'll dive into the details around that licensing process, and then we'll open it up to questions from the audience. So if you'll reserve your questions until the question segment, I think a lot of them will be answered in our question and answer portion. So to keep things moving, I'm going to start with Ms. Ajax, and we're going to just get a general overview of what is the Bureau of Medical Cannabis Regulation, and what are you responsible for?
Well, thank you very much, and good morning, and it's really an honor to be here. We're always excited to come address groups like this so we can get information out there on what we're doing. We've been busy, if you've noticed. There's a lot of stuff going on, but I'll go over a brief overview of what the Bureau is responsible for. When I got hired back in February, it's been a year, and it feels like it's been like years, actually. But anyway, it's been a year, and we were first tasked with the medical side of it, the licensing and enforcement of medical cannabis and putting that statewide regulatory structure in place. And that included the Bureau's responsibility on licensing is distributors, the testing laboratories, the transporters, and the dispensaries. So that was our focus. And then, as all of you know, a couple of months ago that changed and our role has expanded to the adult use market. So now we're responsible for both medical and adult use and putting those the statewide structure in place for both. So some additions, as a lot of you know, there's a lot of similarities between Proposition 64 and the Medical Cannabis Regulation and Safety Act, but there's a few key differences. One is there's no transporter license under adult use, but it's still under medical, and then there's the addition of the microbusiness license. So we're also responsible for that. Also, if you've noticed, testing laboratory goes back under the Department of Public Health. So a lot of those differences we're hoping are going to align up during the legislative process, and those things are going to align. So the goal here is that we're regulating one system for both adult and medical. And I think everybody here would agree that that makes sense. You don't want to have two different systems. I think it would be confusing, it would be expensive, and it just doesn't make sense. So that's our goal here. And I know you want me to talk a little about the regulations and where
yeah,
we're at?
I was going to ask you actually to give everybody a quick civics lesson if people haven't been following. So we passed these statutes, and now you have to pass regulations. And so explain what happens once a statute passes for everybody.
Sure. So the Bureau is also tasked with being the lead agency to coordinate all of the cannabis activity. And so I'm very fortunate to work with Amber and the Department of Public Health. They're not here today, but I want to mention they're responsible for the manufacturers. So they're an important part in this. So a lot of us, we meet like all the time to talk about everything, but especially regulations. As you know, we keep talking about it and everybody's like, okay, we want to see those regulations. We get that. So we've been developing the medical side for quite some time. The Bureau and Food and Ag and Department of Public Health, we held pre-regulatory sessions all over the state, and we were talking about specific concepts and ideas that we had for the regulations, and we encouraged people to come back to us with feedback. So we've looked at a lot of that feedback, and we are ready to release our regulations. We're probably looking at the next, you're going to see the next 6 to 8 weeks. Hopefully by the early April, those will be out. They're proposed regulations. I think that's important to note. There are proposal, and then you will have the ability, as once we propose them, we immediately go into a 45-day comment period. That is the Administrative Procedure Act. That is mandatory for all of us, so you can read that text and then comment to us. We also will be holding hearings once again across the state to take your comment. So I think it's important for all of us to know that those are proposals, and it can be changed. So if we didn't get something quite right, or it doesn't make sense, or there's a better way to do it, we want to hear from you. So it's really important that people get involved and read that. And some of the things, I think we talk about the regulations a lot, and I don't know that we talk a lot about what's going to be in those regulations. So examples is our licensing fees for all three of us. That's going to be outlined in the regulations and how that's going to look like for each license type. For us at the Bureau, the dispensaries, you're going to see regulations addressing security requirements, storage requirement, employee requirements. So a variety of things. The distributor and transporter, there's going to be storage requirements for them and how the distributor is going to act, what they're going to have to do as the quality control agent. For the transporter, you're going to see regulations detailing the rules for vehicle requirements. So they cover a wide range of things. So it is a lot to read, but we really encourage everybody to get involved. So that's for the medical, and I think it's important to note that because we still now have two statutes, we are going forward with the medical regulations. Now, a lot of this is going to stay the same because when we talk about security requirements for a dispensary, it's not going to change based on the adult use statutes because it's going to be similar. So we're going to go through that process, but as we all know, there are going to be some legislative changes. Because we don't know what those changes are right now, we are going to hold off on our adult use regulations, and all three licensing authorities plan to wait to see what that legislation is. Once we have that information, then we are going to go forward and propose our Proposition 64 regulations probably early fall, around September, and we're going to use the emergency authority we have to do emergency regulations. So we have that authority in the statute, and that means we'll propose those regulations. We'll still go through public comment, but it happens after the fact. They go into place first, and then we deal with public comment. And we're doing that because we need to meet our goals and statutory mandates of January 1st, 2018. We must have those regulations completed by then. And I'm going to tell you right now, we're all confident that we can meet that timeline to have those regulations finalized.
That's wonderful. So just to follow up, when the regulations are released, will people be able to provide comment electronically in addition to attending one of the hearings for people who might want to remotely provide their feedback?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
Perfect. So I heard from a bird that our head of the Department of Consumer Affairs stepped down this week, and I must ask, does that change anything about your process within the Bureau, or is it just sort of an isolated non-issue as far as California's cannabis community is concerned?
So it's not going to change our timelines. Yeah. We're still headed, but we are sorry to see Director Kadani go. He's been a big supporter of the Bureau, and but he has another opportunity. So I'm excited for him, too, but we're sorry to see him go.
Okay, wonderful. So in terms of regulation, people may be familiar with the fact that under MCRSA, there is an ability for our regulators to deny a license to an application. They may deny a license to an applicant who has a past criminal conviction. When we're looking at some of our biggest brands here in California, a lot of them are actually operated by people who have felony convictions on their record and may not have petitioned to have that expunged yet now that we've passed Prop 64. So for people in the audience who are very much interested in what that standard will be and how they will be able to determine whether or not they should proceed with the application process, as it's going to be costly to some people, what sorts of criteria or what will the Bureau be looking at from a licensing perspective to see if someone has rehabilitated themselves, or you know, what generally can people start working on now to anticipate the January 1 deadline for applications?
So we get this question for us a lot. This is really an important issue for all of you, and we understand that. So part of our regulations when it comes to general licensing of what an applicant is going to be required is going to be, we're going to detail what that rehabilitation criteria is. And I think I'm going to tell you right now, it's great if you have a rehabilitation certificate or an expungement that you could provide to us, but we understand those are very difficult to get. And depending on what jurisdiction you are, it can take, it's a time-consuming process. So there's other ways. If you have that, that's fine, and you can submit that. But we're going to have some specific rehabilitation criteria, such as passage of time, maybe some of the circumstances surrounding it. What has changed in your life? And we're going to look at all of that information. We're going to allow you to submit whatever information you think is relevant to that conviction. But I think it's also important to note that we want to include everybody in this process. We want everybody to be able to apply and to be able to come to any of the licensing authorities. And so it is not in any way, we do not want to exclude folks for something they did years ago that's now legal. That just wouldn't make sense. So we understand that. And so that is where I'm going to tell you, when you see those regulations, we want your input. What we've put down on some of the things we're going to be looking at, please provide us that input, because I think it's important for us to hear from you, especially on this issue.
Wonderful. So with that, I think we'll turn to Ms. Morris and get an overview of Cal Cannabis and understand a little bit about what her department is doing as it pertains to cultivation. So if you just want to launch into talking just generally about what your regulatory scope is so people can understand how you're bifurcated.
Sure. Good morning. Hi. The people in the audience, I would like to see how many farmers do we have? Raise of hands. All right. Our people. So at the end of 2015, Governor Brown signed the Medical Act into law, and California Department of Food and Agriculture was tasked with licensing farmers. So I was hired in March of last year, and like Lori said, I don't think I've slept since, and we're not sleeping until 2018. we are tasked with licensing cultivators. Basically, I look at my job as having three major tasks. The first is regulations, and I want to expand on the civics lesson here. So there's laws that are put into place, and those laws can be put into place by the legislature in Sacramento or the voters. So we have laws that were created by both for cannabis. And what our departments do, basically, is we don't make things up. We only have authority under the laws that exist. So what the legislature put together and what the voters passed is what we're basically clarifying in our regulations. So when you think about what we're doing and some of the things that we will be covered in our regulations, consider that it all stems from the laws that were passed. And I just think that that's very important to note, because I get a lot of comments about why this, why that. And there's some things that are out of our control as a regulatory agency. If you want the laws changed, that needs to go through the legislature or through a vote. If you want regulations changed, though, so if our regulations come out and they just don't make sense, like Lori said, it's a beautiful public process, and we want you to participate. It's very rare, I think, that any industry gets an opportunity to help create the ground rules for their industry. And we're in that point right now. It's a really exciting time in cannabis. And I think everybody should embrace that, that it is, it's not happening to you, it's happening with you. So just keep that in mind. For all of us, we do have listservs that are available on our websites. And so instead of trying to figure out when our regulations are released, if you sign up for our automatic emails, you'll be notified immediately when those are available to the public for review and comment. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody's very aware of that, and I think I'll be stressing that more as I talk. But it's very important that everybody understand that it's an amazing opportunity right now, and I think a lot of people think it's happening to them, but we want you to be part of this. So licensing cultivators, we've visited a lot of grow sites. I've been in the ag industry for a while, so I know what growers do. They grow plants. And that's what you guys do. So we just had to learn the nuances of your businesses so that when we created our regulations, when we were in the process of creating our regulations, we made sure that we did that, keeping in mind your current business practices so that we could stick, so that we could streamline our regulations to what's currently happening as much as we can. While we're creating our regulations, CDFA is also responsible for conducting an environmental analysis. So part of the reason that the legislature passed the laws was to protect California's environment from the cultivation of cannabis. And part of our responsibility as the Department of Agriculture is to analyze what impacts our program will have on California's environment. So we have hired a consultant because we've got this much time and not enough staff to do it ourselves, but we work very closely with them. And they're basically looking at the impacts of the statewide program. So they're looking at, as the state licensing authority, what impacts will our program have on the environment? Are they significant? And if they are significant, we will be mitigating those. So I just want you to be aware of that. In our regulatory process, we are analyzing the impacts on the environment. And again, if we find significant impacts from our program, they'll have to be mitigated to a less than significant level, if that makes any sense. The third thing, so regulations, the environmental analysis, and then also we've got some technology programs, systems. Sorry, I'm learning IT words. Systems. We have two systems that we're standing up right now, Lori and Chief Ajax and the Department of Public Health. We're all putting up licensing systems that will allow you to apply online. Yay! Because we're in 2017, right? We really want to have that available to you by the time we start licensing in January 1st, 2018. That's a big goal of ours, and I think it's a goal that we can achieve. The Department of Food and Agriculture is also responsible for standing up the track and trace system for the state. So we won't be the only ones using it. All the licensing authorities and some of our peripheral agencies like CHP, who else? Board of Equalization for tax purposes. So several state agencies will be using it, but we are the lucky department who got tasked with standing it up for everybody. So we're working really quickly on that. We've been meeting with the other states to determine what they're doing, not to mirror them, but to learn from their experiences. We're not just meeting with the regulatory side, because we do want to know, is it valuable to the compliance of following the regulations? But we also have been talking to the growing community to understand what works for you, what doesn't work for you, how can we make this less onerous, but still make sure that we're protecting public health and the environment. So we've been working really quickly on that. Technology, you know, it's a big lift, and luckily I've got a fantastic team of people and the California Department of Technology, who even knew there was one? I didn't until, I don't know, 6 months ago. They stepped in and they're really helping coordinate all the different departments who are involved with the track and trace system. So that is, in a nutshell, what we're up to.
Great. So it's a little silly to ask this question on such a rainy day. I admire everyone being here, because usually if it rains, I stay in my house. But if you haven't followed California closely, we were in a historic drought until recently. And part of, I imagine, the CEQA analysis and the mitigation will be around water usage. And this isn't necessarily a question that she will answer, but it has to be asked publicly. So what considerations about water will be factored into the apportioning of licenses, the license types by the department, if any, by Cal Cannabis?
So in the statute, if you read the Medical Act, I'm not sure if it made it into adult use, but right now we're focusing on medical. So Medical has a lot of language about what's required for water, and that is tasked to the State Water Resources Control Board. It's a big old mouthful, but if you go to our website, calcannabis.cdfa.ca.gov, we have links to all these sister agencies so you can get to their page. I think if you just Google calcannabis, it'll be easiest for you to get there. But the Water Board is basically tasked with developing principles and guidelines for water quantity and quality. And then there's also another task at the regional level for waste discharge. So the Water Board and the Regional Water Quality Control Board are working right now on developing those regulations or principles and guidelines for the cannabis industry. So I would suggest that you keep in the loop about what they're doing. I know they also have a listserv. So if they do anything that's important, they'll notify you through that. And water is one of the things that is being considered in our environmental analysis. So it's definitely a huge consideration in California. Where's the water coming from? If you have discharge, how are you getting rid of your water? Diversions, if you are diverting water to use for your farms. All of that is being worked on by the Water Board. We're working really closely with them, and sometimes when we go out to do scoping meetings or public outreach, we invite them to come along with us, or they ask to come along with us because, you know, we're trying to reach the same audience. So if you're going one place, you can two birds, one stone.
Thank you. That's wonderful. So I'm going to transition into talking about a different type of farming. I know some people in here are urban farmers, and one consideration when we're talking about the environment and who is seen as a farmer in our state, a lot of people forget that our cities are actually places of cultivation. So Ms. Morris, how different do you foresee regulation being for the urban farmer at the state level, particularly with the cottage license type that was authorized last year? And are you going to have to make some adjustments to the economic analysis and licensing in that regard?
Okay, so I'll talk on the urban farming first. So if you're not aware already, before you come to the state to get a license, you first must get a local license. So if your local agency is not cannabis friendly, I would also encourage that you reach out to them. Your elected officials are there to represent everyone, and if they don't know what you want, they can't help you. So if you don't have friendly locals, I would encourage you to work with them. But the urban farming, basically, CDFA is not going to be addressing zoning. So I think in a lot of cities, they're going to limit where cannabis can be farmed, you know, whether it's in an industrial area or, you know, some places maybe a little bit more liberal in where they allow grow sites. But it's something that you should be involved with if you're in an urban area to determine, you know, if it fits within your business model. I do see also that in the urban areas, from what I've seen, there's much more indoor grows. And what I expect is that the analysis from the environmental analysis will have different mitigations for those farmers that are indoor and those farmers that are outdoors. You have to consider, you know, the energy and the greenhouse gases that are consumed and emitted from the indoor growers, and outdoor growers have a whole different set of environmental concerns. So it's, I would see that there's most likely going to be different mitigations for the different farmers. And the second question you had?
Well, actually, I was going to transition to co-op models next. Okay. I think you covered it pretty thoroughly. So for people who are new to the industry, part of the Prop 215 and SB 420 system was a collaborative, cooperative model, and activists helped each other in cultivating and providing patients with medication specifically under, you know, our medical regime. So if a co-op model is approved this legislative session, I note that it's not explicitly in our statute right now, how do you think this will change CalCannabis's activity with respect to evaluating applications and regulation of businesses?
Well, Sunshine, I've learned that we just have to be flexible with what the legislature is going to throw at us. There's a lot of bills that have been introduced recently, and the department stands, you know, we're keeping very close eye on what's happening, and I guess, honestly, I choose right now to focus on the things that I'm tasked with the understanding that we need to evaluate the things that are coming. I did want to go back to the cottage type growers. Yeah. So the Department of Food and Agriculture represents all agriculture, and it's very important to not just our program, but also our executive team, that there's room at the table for the small growers. So we're doing our best with the statute limitations that we have. So the laws mandate specific things that we can't change. But there are some things that are within our control that we can help the small growers out with. And we're doing what we can to make sure that we have room at the table for our legacy growers.
And when we're talking cottage cultivation, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's a grow that's under 500 square feet. So we're talking pretty small.
So there's 500 square feet. I think it's 2,500 indoor.
Mixed lighter greenhouse.
Yeah.
There's over 19 license types, so
yeah,
I'm not going to put people on the spot to memorize all that square footage. And for me, I'm not spatial, so it's not helpful. So my final question for you is with respect to the Type 3 license under MCRSA. This is the only license type under MCRSA where we have written into the statute that there will be limits as to the number of licenses. And I know some people are getting local authorizations for this specific license. So when can we expect to learn of the number of licenses that you expect to issue under Type 3, and how will you be determining these limits?
So the criteria which we limit Type 3 under will be in our regulations. And what we've considered in the process of making the decision of how we limit those licenses, so again, I didn't decide out of the clear blue sky that we were going to limit these. Law says that I had to. Thank you, legislature. And what we're considering is current business models. So like Sunshine said, there are some local governments who have already decided to move forward without understanding first the state's criteria in which it will be limited. So we've taken that into consideration. We've taken into consideration what's out there right now. The environmental impacts are definitely something that we look at. All the comments that we received, that was one of the questions that we asked directly to the stakeholders when we went out throughout the state in September. How do you think we should limit this? So we received hundreds of responses, and we've taken all of the responses from the people who will be impacted by the decision and considered that input to make our decision. So you'll see it when the regulations come out. I wish I could tell you now, but we've drafted a decision. It may change before it goes out, so unfortunately I can't share it now.
No scoops, unfortunately. I was hoping for some early morning exhaustion-induced disclosures. So we're going to transition over to the business side or the farming side and get some thoughts from both Luke and Hezekiah. So I'm going to start out with Hezekiah Allen. Again, for those of you who didn't hear me earlier, he's the Executive Director of California Growers Association, representing our farmers. So Hez, in view of the pending legislation that you track very closely on behalf of your constituency and our existing regulatory scheme that Ms. Ajax and Ms. Morris just outlined for us, what are the top three issues, I'll keep you to three, that you want to resolve in the next 6 to 9 months between, you know, the April initial regs and the September emergency regs?
I'm going to take four.
Okay, fine.
All right,
fine.
Cool. You know, from our perspective, there are a number of issues. Obviously, I think the differences between Proposition 64 and the Medical Cannabis and Regulatory Safety Act is really the big question. Clear rules and certainty are what we're really looking for at this point, is what are the rules so we can follow them.